Welcome back to Thursday Front Page 94.7, The Pulse, as I said before the break. Sue Barrett, who has joined us quite regularly of recent times, very interesting subject matter around the shape of Australian politics. And one of the things that's popping up, and after the discussion with Dennis Scanlon earlier, about the disillusionment with not just the government of the day federally, but we see it now through states as well, and also through oppositions, parties, that their own internal behaviours are pretty ordinary, pretty confusing, and while they think that you're going to either vote for one or the other, there are definitely alternatives. And one of those things that popped up some time ago was the Voices of campaign that got an independent into the seat of Indi, and that's happening again around Australia, and Sue Barrett is leading one of those in her own electorate. Sue, good morning. Welcome to The Pulse.
Good morning, Rob. Lovely to be with you again and with your listeners.
Yeah, it's good to have you chatting. I think one of the opportunities that I have here, I'm strong on a personal level, but this privileged position gives the opportunity to talk about subjects that give other people out there the chance to listen to an alternative and take a view. But certainly, talking about researching alternatives, and you're very much the same. The Indi election of an independent clearly got your thought process that there is a better way of going about it. Could you just go all the way back to how that the Voices of campaign actually started and how it's grown over time?
Yes, my pleasure. There's always been independence in Parliament, but what Voices of is about a community independence, and that's quite different. Because when we go to elections, we often see on the ballot paper, you know, people with, say, a one-issue voting opportunity. They want to focus on one issue. But what we're seeing is with community independence, they're providing an alternative to party representation. And what they're finding is that they want people who actually represent their community. And this was made very clear, and this is where it was kind of born, if you like, back in 2013, when Cathy McGowan actually went up against Sophie Mirabella in the regional seat of Indi, which is in northeast Victoria, takes in places like, you know, Wangaratta, Wodonga, and those sorts of things. And what they were finding is that the Liberal Party, who happened to hold that seat for a very long time, just thought it was a, you know, lay down the zeer that they would get it again. But there was a lot of unrest in the community. But what was not there at that time was to actually get your voices together to talk about what was that unrest. A lot of people thought, oh, well, I suppose we just have to accept this. But this is where the Voices of Community Independence movement began. People realised they didn't have to just accept the status quo. They could make a stand. And the original intention of the Indi approach was to actually make the seat marginal. They obviously wanted to win, but they didn't know if they could. But if they could at least amass a number of people and enough people to talk about what's important for their electorate, they might be able to raise awareness for their community about what good representation would look like. So that was the original intention. And it's often referred to as the Indi way. And then it actually became the Voices for Indi, and a movement actually began. And so this has now actually moved beyond Indi, of course. In fact, Cathy McGowan got elected twice. She stayed in Parliament for two terms. And then they did something that had never been done before. They managed to actually get another independent to follow on from her and get elected, and that's Helen Haynes. So they now have three terms of representation from an independent in the seat of Indi. We've also seen, too, in the 2019 election that we had Zali Steggall go up against Tony Abbott in Moringa. And we also saw Karen Phelps take on the seat when Malcolm Turnbull vacated Wentworth. So what you're seeing here is not just an individual saying, oh, hi, I've got this issue, do you want to vote for me? There is this new model that's emerging around what we call community independence. And if people are interested, there's actually a website called communityindependence.com.au that they can go and explore what independents are about. And so maybe just to establish what they are about is that community independents are focused on putting their community first. engaging with their communities to actively participate in politics. They want to communicate in a very transparent and constructive manner and bring constructive politics to the table. They also want to reflect the values and views of their electorates and be answerable to them. And they're also creating real political change in Australia. What they're not are a member of a party or a representative of a sector interest or politics or single issue politicians. I hope that kind of, you know, foundations for our discussion.
Yeah, interestingly, going back to 2013, Sophie Mirabella was a very polarising, I would have thought, extreme right-wing candidate within the Liberal Party and probably had already created a bit of vacuum in that electorate. So the opportunity was rife, possibly. But clearly the other examples that you've given post that and the fact that this independent is now a three-term member, albeit with two different people, shows that if it's done well, it really resonates with the voters for a long period of time. And while the political climate is as it is now and seemingly getting worse by the day, good, strong members with that community support could be a way of the future.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, it's started to accelerate even more. There are now 30-plus voices of communities around the country, and there are several of those that are actually very seriously taking that opportunity to put an independent candidate forward at the next federal election. And so the goal is to not only make those safe seats, in inverted commas, marginal, but the aim is to win. So, and because of the great work done by Kerry Allen and others, there's now blueprints available. So it's not just, oh, let's put an independent candidate up and then sort of make it up as we go. We now have some lovely frameworks in place that can allow people to actually really mobilise and get together and have their voices heard and not be taken for granted by the major parties. Because what we've seen there with the major parties is that they tend to put the party first, not the electorate. And so what you find is that people aren't getting their voices heard. They don't like what's going on. One of the biggest issues, particularly in a Goldstein, but not just Goldstein, is the lack of action on climate change. That's a huge issue in this electorate, even though it's blue ribbon Liberal seat. There are a lot of people here who want, you know, good, productive, scientific-based, expert-ready action on climate. And they have a number of other things they want action on too, but that is actually really serious. And if we're not being taken seriously and our voices aren't being heard, then we've got to find alternative ways to get positive, productive, effective, sustainable change.
Sue, just on that subject, I was going to ask you about learning from the experiences of Indi with your work in Goldstein, and you've sort of suggested that that there is blueprints and other models have taken it up. Is there a danger that this growth of voices off could fall into something like a get-up type campaign, which leaves itself open for criticism as being an arm for another body, or do you feel that the framework really leaves you totally independent and therefore away from that type of criticism?
Well, okay, so the community independent framework is not dictating policy, it is not dictating a line. If you come back to the central tenet of it, which is actually about representing your electorate, your community. So what the community independent model does is it says, firstly, the voices of my community are the most important. I need to understand them first. And what I would call that in business terms is client-facing, right? So if a business is client-facing, it's taking into account its clients, it's understanding what's important to them, and it's creating a mutually fair exchange of value relationship between the buyer and the seller, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So in this case here, in politics, when your representative stops listening to you, or never listen to you, you know, as far as we know, you're just sitting back and they're just kind of playing with you, aren't they? They're not really taking into account your concerns, they're not listening to you, they're not understanding you. That's not a healthy relationship. So the central tenet of the community independence is to community centred to be electoral centred and understand the community and represent that in Parliament. That's what good representative democracy should be about.
Yeah.
Fortunately, with the two-party preferred system we have in Australia, it's actually lost that. Look, there are good people out there in political parties, don't get me wrong. But ultimately what happens if you look at their voting register is that they have to fall in line with what the party says rather than what their constituents say. And that's where the power of independence really comes to the fore, is that they have they have to be pragmatic too, but they have in mind what is required from my community.
I've just lost you a little bit there. You may have moved the phone a bit, Sue.
Yes.
You've just gone a bit crackly on us.
Oh, you hear me right?
That's a bit better.
Okay, sorry about that. I was just saying that what's important is that with independence, that they have a voice for their community on that parliamentary national stage, but they also know that they're going to have to be, agreements that are going to be pragmatic and they have to compromise on certain things. But they will consult if they're convinced of that. So this is the challenge that we have, is that not everything is black and white and shiny and wonderful answers. Like anything, we have to find proper solutions by working in collaboration. So this means that independents, won't favour sides. They will look at the evidence, the arguments, and then make informed decisions about what best represents their electorate and the country at the time.
It may depend a little bit on the profile of the independent who is coming in to pick up this particular model, but interestingly, the last federal election, and probably to a degree the one previously, it's starting to get almost Americanised, and it's about personalities. The Liberal Party went to the last election without doubt discrediting Bill Shorten. That was their focus. So it almost got to be a choice of Shorten v Morrison and forget about all the policies in behind. With a profile of an independent, keeping a focus on the issues is a really fine balance as opposed to promoting the virtues of the independent candidate.
Of course, you can't separate them out, and unfortunately we've kind of moved into identity politics as well, and personality-driven politics. So it does help that you have someone who can relate to and engage with people effectively, that people feel comfortable with, so being a good, a good citizen, someone that they feel they can trust. Again, there are people out there in politics who talk a good game, but they never deliver. And they also may be charming, but they don't actually have anything behind them that would actually represent their community. So it's not simple. It's quite complex, and you're dealing with a range of things. I think what the electorates need to do, what people like citizens like us need to do, is not accept things at face value and accept simplistic answers to complex issues. What we do need to do is some degree of homework. We need to look at the evidence, we need to look at what these people are standing for, and we need to be able to ask them questions and not accept simplistic answers and things that just seem to sort of, airbrush, things away. No, ask them for the evidence, get the facts. And if they can't tell you, then they don't know their subject well. And so again, it's hard to be across everything, but you do want someone who's studied and who actually understands what they're getting into. I've read Cathy McGowan's book about her experience called Cathy Goes to Canberra, and you can see the amount of work she did. And the same with Zali Stegall and others. How much work they do to be on top of all the legislation that goes before Parliament. They need a team around them. And so the blueprint, not only for getting elected, but the blueprint for how to run an independent office in Canberra is also developed as well. So we do need people who are competent and capable, not just there for self-serving purposes, but to serve their communities.
And again, a segue into my next point, because I think if people are considering this but doubt the circumstances, I think Karen Phelps certainly had a profile. She was a much publicised television doctor, so people knew who she was. Zali Stegall certainly. But to a lesser degree, Andrew Wilkie and Kath McGowan have proven, if you go back through their track record, of not only were they elected because good people, they didn't just sit on their laurels at that point. The work that they've managed to do, Stegall, Wilkie and McGowan in particular, and now Haines, if you go back through their track record in Parliament, they have been extremely good representatives, not only of their electorate, but also just general principles right across Australian society.
Well, that's right. And I mean, you know, if you look at someone's character, their behaviours, their actions, you can see how they've performed before they got onto that public stage. So we do need to look at what people stood for, what they stand for, how they conduct themselves. No one is perfect. We're all fallible. But you can see consistency in people's behaviours and actions and intentions. And I think what we're seeing with people of the names you've just mentioned is that they have been honourable people throughout their careers. They've looked at what they're doing, they've tried to do the right thing. If they've made mistakes, they've acknowledged them and accepted them and addressed them and moved on. They're people who you would want to be around, people that you know you could trust and who would have your back and you would have theirs, because their character, their behaviour, their actions speaks, you know, for themselves, because they're honourable people.
We're having a very interesting situation down here in our region. Sue, you're probably familiar, the seat of Corangamite runs through the middle of Geelong and a lot of small areas around and onto the Bellarine Peninsula. It's been a very tight tussle, a very marginal seat for quite a lot of elections, and there's been a huge amount of money poured into that electorate come election time by both parties. And then sitting on the other side of the boundary to the northern suburbs of Geelong, where we have a different socio-economic environment, there's been a Labor Party member who has sat almost unopposed. In fact, it'll be fair to suggest that at the last election, although the Liberal Party had a name on the ballot paper, they didn't really run a candidate. And he has had no pressure on him whatsoever. And if you look at the expenditure in that area, it's been very, very minimal from federally. So this is a perfect environment, I would have thought, for a strong independent to come into this region and put up a good case and really shake the cage of the Labor Party in the seat of Corio.
Well, potentially as well. I think the challenge would be when you're in opposition, you don't have much say in terms of where, you know, the money gets spent. And I think one of the biggest challenges for any of these big parties is the favouritism that they play, the pork barrelling that they do with our money. And, you know, and they wave shiny things, you know, to, you know, the electorate and promise this and promise that. I just think we have to be a bit more discerning as, you know, voters as to what's really behind that. Because people need to realise that this pork barrelling, this use of money is actually our money. It's not someone else's money. It's the public's money that's being used and in many cases abused for the pure purposes of staying in power rather than doing the right thing for the different areas and being fair and reasonable.
Yeah, and I think that shone out in the last election in this area, because where the money needs to be spent is definitely in the northern suburbs. But the sitting member for Corio spent a lot of his time campaigning with the opposition member in the seat of Corangamite, who was ultimately successful over the sitting member, Sarah Henderson. But they basically followed the Liberal Party candidate around with a checkbook, matching everything that she delivered, they matched. While in the northern suburbs, where it's definitely needed, the sitting member made no such promises, despite sitting in opposition. And the point you've taken, of course, is they can't do a lot from that point. But at least you can make announcements and look as though you're seriously trying to help. That never really happened, and it was glaringly obvious, and I think it could come back to bite if, of course, I'd love to see a Voices of pop up in the seat of Corio. At this stage, there's a stronger Greens vote coming through, but that looks to be the only way that someone at this point can actually vote disapprovingly of the current setup.
Yes, well, this is where, regardless of which big party flavour we're looking at, if you take your voters, for granted, if you don't engage and work with them and fight for them and what they want, then they'll start looking somewhere else. And again, you know, not every electorate may be looking at this opportunity, but when you see 30 plus electorates now looking to actually make change, that's quite significant out of, I think, 152, is it? I can't remember now exactly, but there's 152 electorates around the country, and if 30 plus are already looking at that, you can see that's quite a significant percentage of change occurring. So we've just got to keep at it and keep working through these things and make sure that we hold our politicians to account, whatever flavour they are.
Sue, that's very interesting. You've probably done a lot of work in Voices Off, the importance of that primary vote. I know there'd be a lot of people in the seat of Corio would just say, well, Labor are going to win, we'll vote for them anyway. But just to give people an indication of whether you call it a protest vote or not, that even if you ultimately believe that the Labor Party will win and you're happy to put them at number five in front of the Liberals at number six or whatever the case may be, how important is it to express that vote of disapproval by putting it to a minor party as opposed to the incumbent?
Look, I think our voting system has a few challenges when it comes to that. From a community independence perspective, what we've seen and what we encourage usually is not to have preferences with any of the parties. Obviously, we'd like to get the number one if we're put in there, you know, as an independent. But what we are encouraging people to is if they can't put an independent number one, then put them number two, okay? So if they still have an allegiance to Labor, Liberal, whoever, but they want to make, you know, like a protest vote, put that viable community independent at number two. That's all. And so it's very difficult. A lot of people don't pay enough attention to the electoral system, and we do need, I think, civics education at school early on to show people how to understand and use our voting rights to best effect. But there's, you know, a lot of us haven't got a clue about how to use our voting rights to best effect. We need to educate ourselves.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, and it's quite sad to know that it's one of the many basic social skills that is not taught in our school environment. We've talked about that in previous interviews about constructing a curriculum to suit the environment in which we're living. That's another one on the edge of it. But what I am noticing as I go around the community is that there's more people are definitely disgruntled with the two major parties. But as I said, because they believe that one's going to win anyway, their vote's wasted, it's not important, so we'll just vote for them and be done with it. But there is a way to send a message, and whether it be an independent or a small party with an active, productive candidate, enthusiastic candidate, voting for them does send a message. If the Labor Party's primary vote in Corio, for example, it might be 52%. If it dropped to 38 or 40, I'm damn sure a message would be well received.
Yeah. Well, they would certainly notice that, that's for sure. And that's what we have to do. There's a saying, I think I may have shared with your listeners before, but it goes like this. You can't change anyone else, but if you change yourself, they have to change how they deal with you. And I think this is exactly the same message that's, you know, resonating here with our vote. And if you change what you do, they will take notice, obviously. They'll pay attention. So they need to start getting outside of their tents, you know, their big party tents, and they need to understand that more and more Australians are dissatisfied with the current state of politics. There are big issues we want addressed. There are important systemic things that we need changed, and we want them to actually act as the stewards and leaders our nation requires. And we need them to actually make effective change and action for the betterment of our country and our electorates. So they can't just sit there fighting each other like street brawlers. They need to be able to step up and actually lead and actually give us the country and the future that we can have and deserve.
On that note, when you and I were much younger people, Sue, a controversial issue in any parliament, state or federal, you might have had one every 5 years, and then it became one every year, and then one a month, and now it's almost one a week. The big one this week, of course, we talked about it earlier with Dennis Scanlon, but Christian Porter's situation is now seemingly untenable. It'll be interesting to see what the party does with him internally, but it just smacks of the arrogance of which you're speaking about, that born-to-rule mentality of being untouchable and just doing whatever, with the confidence that come election time we'll be back and we'll have another 3 years of it.
Look, the amount of commentary that's going around at the moment around this particular situation is incredible. And, I mean, unfortunately, there have been so many missteps and issues and you know, corrupt activities happening, you know, just in the last, you know, few years with this government. And it's been very hard. You know, anyone in the past would have lost their job and gone, right? And so I don't know if this is the peak that we've reached, finally, something that's so bad that finally something will be done. But I'm not holding my breath because, quite frankly, without an ICAC in place federally, this current government is running amok and just playing us all for fools, and it's just awful. And I know a lot of people aren't even aware of this, but many of us who watch this and interact with this politically are just appalled and disgusted. I can't believe we've got to this point where, you know, even things as terrible as happened with the blind trust situation here is not actually a meaningful offence.
Yes, you unearthed something else too to show that this sort of blatant disrespect, I suppose, for principles of life that we're seeing at Parliament are flowing through. We had a horrible Banking Royal Commission report, but seemingly even into other major corporations, the lack of attention to detail and good principle and good governance seems to be flowing through as well. So what's now acceptable in Canberra seems to be becoming acceptable elsewhere, which is not good for a good society.
No, it's not. And when integrity is at risk and governance is but a sort of facade, and you see people doing whatever they like with whatever they want with, you know, our money and, you know, for their own self, you know, gain, we have lost our way, and we need to stop and reset that, because when trustworthiness is lost, societies decay and fall apart. And I know it sounds dramatic, but it's, you know, it's fundamentally true, that we need to come back to a centre of integrity and governance. Trust is what holds us all together. The fact I can trust you, you can trust me, you know, that's incredibly important to the you know, flourishing nature of any relationship. And so when trust is breached, everyone's wary and on edge, and then bad stuff continues to happen. I mean, I was just thinking, you know, with Angela Merkel, who is retiring after 16 years in power. I don't know if people are aware, but she never appointed any of her relatives to any state position, okay? She also made sure that she didn't buy any real estate, cars, yachts, private jets, airfields, or whatever it might have been, you know, for her. She did nothing of that sort. She continued to live in the same house that she, you know, was in before she got elected. She continued to do her own, you know, housekeeping with her husband. She continued to sort of manage things. I love this statement here when someone said, you know, we realise that you're wearing the same suit, don't you have another? And she said, I'm a civil servant, not a model. And I think that's what people have forgotten, these politicians have forgotten. They are civil servants serving us.
Yeah, that's the catch-22 for someone like that, that they should be put on a pedestal. And I'm leaning across the Tasman. I got almost a crush on Jacinda Ardern. I like the way she goes about it. But the last thing they would want is attention on them rather than their job and their policies. But we need to have the lesson of Angela Merkel to show what good politics and good politicians can be, because her track record is extraordinarily sound and honest.
I mean, she, you know, as they said, Germany said goodbye to its leader, physicist and quantum chemist, who was not tempted by fashion or lights, and, you know, and didn't buy things to sell it, serve herself. She served her country instead.
Yeah, just an outstanding individual, and hopefully we get more. Just quickly before you go, if someone in Geelong is listening and think that they could be the independent that could take on someone in this particular region, where does someone go to find more about Voices Of?
Okay, so, well, you can look up Voices Of on the internet, but if you want to know how to be a community independent candidate, the website I mentioned earlier, Community Independence, as in E-N-T-S, .com.au. If people type that into their search engine, they will actually find the Community Independence Project, and that's where you can go and get lots of support and help if you're interested and to see what you can kick off. But also on social media, like on Twitter, just look up Voices Of or Voices For Communities, and you'll start to see, you'll find a whole range of us out there, and you can start to connect in to getting support and those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think it's a very good time to do it, because we know that there's discontent in the community, and it really only takes a few to get a ball rolling quickly. And we've talked about the examples before, Cathy McGowan, Zali Stegall, Andrew Wilkie. There's been a lot of successful ones who are in Parliament and doing good work. So the model's there. It works very well. We encourage people to pursue it. Sue, thank you so much again for your time. I look forward to our next chat, whatever that will be, but hopefully be on a better subject matter rather than us continuing. Well, it is positive, because we are trying to make change to something that's not good, so that's got to be a good thing.
My pleasure, and thanks again, and greetings to your listeners, and everyone have a great week. Take care.
All the best. Thank you, Sue Barrett. You're listening to 94.7 The Pulse. This is the Thursday Front Page.